you may be hitting at the root of a problem with a lot of people.
Go ahead.
We in general try to, I don't know if the perfect word is escape or deny, but we try to divorce ourselves away from the people and events that make us what we are right now, instead of realizing that is why I'm here right now.
Welcome everybody to the podcast. This is Dr. John Duffy. It's the Dr. John Duffy podcast. Hopefully you found the right spot here. I am privileged and kind of thrilled to be sitting with a very good friend of mine from a long time ago now. His name is Mark. Welcome, man.
Hey, it's good to be here. It's always good to be with you, John.
See, this right here is where I want to start with you.
Go.
Mark, so I've known Mark, 23, 24 years
at
or so?
At least that. Yeah. Let's call it 25.
We're going to go with 25. Right. Yeah. This is some anniversary. This is we should be exchanging gifts.
Or cutting a cake or something.
So Mark is one of the two or three most positive, upbeat, outgoing, warm people I've ever known in my life. And what we're going to investigate for this hour is, how does a guy get there and how does a guy stay there, right? Because I spend a lot of time in my work and on these podcasts talking about what's not going so well, what needs to be fixed. Here, I'm sitting across from a guy who I think is, by and large, a pretty happy guy and pretty content and connected. Talk to me about that, man.
Well, first of all, that's a heck of a compliment, you know?
I thought I'd load the deck on you.
well, let's start playing the cards then. You know, and I've told you this before. I mean, about being positive, about being happy, you kind of have to want it. And if you want it, you can find it. Now, I know there's other circumstances and situations, that make it tougher. I know that people might need therapy or medication to help them find that. But, and this is an interesting point, I've always said, especially when I was younger, now, as you get older, you find things change, but I've always said my best therapy has been my family and my friends. On the other side of that, my biggest problems have been my family and my friends. So it's a double-edged sword.
It's a double-edged sword, but I think a lot of people would say, for me, the side of the scale that's heavier is the pain and the sorrow and the grief that my family and friends caused me, especially family. And you seem to be able to find at least a shift in the scales so that you get more good than bad out of almost every relationship. Am I missing that?
No, you're not missing it. To me, you almost have to salvage it sometimes. I mean, you got me now thinking about, how I grew up. And, and I tell people stories about how I grew up and I'm laughing. Sometimes people look at me with their eyes wide and going, "Oh my God." I mean, some of the worst things. I remember when I was probably 11 or 12, one of my mom's friends had a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. In our bathroom, one summer day, I came home and found her in the bathroom, actually on the floor of the bathroom, trail of blood and stuff.
You witnessed this at 11 or 12 years old?
Oh, yeah. And nobody,
traumatic for any kid.
Yeah, I guess it would be traumatic, but as I look back at it now, it wasn't. It just was something that was. It's something that happened. I think the most interesting thing about that whole situation was we knew how to call the police. There was no 911. If you gave me a few minutes, I'd come up with the number of the police, because there were so many things that happened when I was a kid that we knew if mom wasn't there, we called the police.
Got it. Yep.
Or we looked for a neighbor, but in certain situations, you just knew the number of the police. My mom taught us that. I mean, as soon as I could reach the phone, I was able to call the police.
Is that right?
Yeah.
When I talk to groups of parents, I always say, like, okay, if you're missing your compass, your goal is competence and resilience. And that to me feels like competence. Like, it feels like, you know, if a guy knows how to call the police when there is something urgent going on at a really young age, there's something impressive about that.
There's something very impressive about it, I'll give you that, but it comes from necessity. And it came from my mother understanding, if I'm not there, who will be there?
Yeah.
You know, people say it takes a village. We grew up in that it takes a village kind of thing.
Yep.
The people across the street, Miss Georgie across the street, Mr. Williams next door, Mr. and Mrs. Williams, you know, everybody had their eye on us when my mom couldn't be there. And we respected that. Not to say we didn't get away with crap.
Right. I know you did.
You know, because there's a backyard and alley that we could hang around with. These guys couldn't find us. But
right.
Yeah, it was them. And it was knowing that, you know, in an emergency, this is what you do. You call the police.
And you brought that up a couple times. Was that a regular occurrence? Do you feel like, oh yeah, a bunch of stuff came up where we had to call the police, where that was a necessity in our lives?
Yeah, because my mom took in everybody. My mom took in everybody, and especially women who were abused, women who were, I'll just say, for lack of a better term, lost.
Uh-huh.
My mom would find them and bring them to our house, and we would have to move out of our bedroom to make room for this person.
Is that right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I didn't know you grew up that way. I mean, your mom sounds like a saint in this regard.
You know, in that regard, my mom is a saint. And again, you know, I think a lot of people envision saints as, oh, these wonderful, beautiful, pious people who, you know, you can look at them and go, hey, that's a saint. But I will say, my mom to me is a saint. My mom to me is my role model. If I am like anybody on this earth, I'm more like my mom than anybody else.
Give us a couple adjectives. What's your mom like?
My mom is a caretaker. My mom is a human being. And there's a lot that goes along with being a true human being. My mom is a true human being, connected. And there's another word that's big to me, is connected. But my mom is connected to everybody else. And that is by virtue, I believe, of when I researched our family history a little bit.
Yep.
I saw hers and I went, oh, this makes sense. Because my mom, the person that I called my grandmother and my grandfather, were not my grandmother and my grandfather.
Really?
I didn't know this. They were an aunt.
Okay.
Who was married. And we had another person living, our Aunt Vashti, who lived with us, that actually raised my mother. And then my grandmother, who wasn't my grandmother, raised my mother. Because my mother was born to her mom was 15 years old when she had my mom.
No kidding.
Yeah. And she was what they called a wild child back in the day.
So uh-huh.
I heard that growing up. Oh, she's a wild child. She's a wild child. My mom was a wild child.
Yeah, you're not talking about your grandmother. You're talking about your mom.
I'm talking about my mom.
Yep, right now. Yep.
Yeah, my mom was a wild child. And as she would say, she ripped and ran the streets. She had fun. We had people over as a single divorced woman. She didn't let grass grow under her feet.
What I know of your mom, she, no wallflower, outspoken, right? If there's something on her mind, she's saying it.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. In fact, and, you know, I know it's a family thing. You know, some might say, oh, it's a black thing, you know, but she was very blunt about things. You know, if you were heavy, she'd go, oh, look at you. Oh, you're too big. Oh, you're too big to sit on my couch. I got a new couch. You're too big to sit in the other chair. I mean, she'd tell you.
I remember her referring to me once as an itty bitty man.
That little white boy.
Right. So I know. I know she's got that in her. I love the way you honor her. So I get that she was a wild child.
Yeah.
I get that she kind of had her fun, ran the streets, did her thing. Did you ever feel like unsafe or like, you know, she wasn't available to you or wasn't present in your life? Or did you feel like, no, she somehow made it seamless?
If I looked back on it and I actually listened to other people's evaluation of my stories, I would say yes. But the real answer is no. My mom could be riding a motorcycle with, you know, this club that she was with down in Mississippi someplace.
Right.
And give us that call, and everything was all right.
No kidding.
Yeah, my mom, she was with a motorcycle club, not a gang, but a right. club.
Yep, yep.
And she was gone here and there in the summertime, especially, you know, when she had a weekend, she'd go. And again, the neighborhood watched us. We'd have maybe one of these women who my mom took in was with us, you know, an adult woman
yep,
was
yep.
with us. But she always, in her way, made sure that we was safe. And I knew, and I still know to this moment, if anybody touched us, anybody did anything towards us, my mom would kill them.
No kidding.
In that, and I say that as a child in that way, oh, she's going to kill you. But in my adult form, I know my mom would kill them. No qualms about it.
Yeah.
They didn't mess with Jackie's kids.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you alluded to this idea that, you know, like, hey, man, when I tell other people this story, they might look at my mom and my story and say, wow, I'm sorry you had to grow up that way. How irresponsible of her, right, to be down in Mississippi or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're saying, oh, no, the net was there.
Yes.
She didn't have to be present every second in order for the net to be there.
Because she widened her net. I don't even think she knew this, any of this, John. She just... My mom winged it through life.
Yeah.
And she's still winging it through
life.
But she winged it. She winged it with us, but she did what I think everything right. She winged it by taking on all these women. And, you know, if there was one, there were three dozen
that really?
We have go through our doors. And she managed with zero tools to do it right. You know, she as she says, she went from pillar to post, raised by different people.
Yep.
You know, never knew her mother. In fact, I told her about a little bit about her mother. What little I could find was that her mother took off at a certain point, and I found a snippet of a record of her in, I believe, in Memphis, where she was a housekeeper for somebody. And I believe I think just by gleaning through the information that she was murdered.
Is that right?
Yeah. At the age of 28 or 29.
Boy, I think about, first of all, that's striking. I'm so sorry about your grandma. I mean,
yeah.
But I don't know if you think of her as your grandmother, but that's a tragic story. And I can understand your point about your mom, pillar to post. Like she made something out of nothing. She may have winged it through life, but.
Yeah,
if I hear you right, not a bad thing, not a bad way to go through life necessarily.
No, and it's, again, it's perspective. It's how I look at it. As a child, she took care of us. Other people would look at it and go, oh my God, she's not taking care of these kids.
Right, right.
We went through periods where we were just dirty, dirty broke. You know, again, single mother.
Yeah.
You know, I know at one point she went back to school trying to be... like something secretarial or something.
Make and, a little bit more money?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, you know, hey, we got, you know, things from, as my dad used to call it, the Zach Monroe, which was welfare.
Right.
We grew up with silver cans that said pork and beef.
Yeah, yeah.
And white boxes that said just raisins on it or cornflakes. The big blocks of cheese, which, you know, without Velveeta on it. But she took care of us.
No,
she
I can
made
tell.
Sure we had food, and she made sure that anybody in the neighborhood or any one of our friends that came over were fed too. And we were dirty broke,
which is almost baffling, like logically, right? It almost feels like loaves and fishes. Like, wow, so you grow up dirt poor, and she's still able to feed people who aren't even her people. She's making them hers, right?
It's interesting that you say that.
Go ahead,
because. You saying it that way seems like it makes sense. No, I'm going to take care of my kids. Forget everybody else's kids. We got to feed mine. When I look at it, no, if I can feed me and my kids, then I can cut a piece of that off and feed whoever else walks in that door.
I'm tempted to jump ahead a couple of decades here.
Go ahead.
You are in charge of a food pantry in this town. Given the story you're telling me now, is there a connection between these things?
Yes, and it's because I had to find the connection. I had to realize the connection, which again, the word connection comes back. We're all connected. We are all connected to everybody we've ever encountered in our entire lives. And you can't escape that.
Right.
Whether it be a good person or a bad person, you pick up a little piece of that and you carry it along with you. I don't believe you forget that. I think it becomes ingrained, like an engram of you is imprinted, and that's what you carry. So that food pantry, and I realized this after I fought so hard for it to become what it is today. We went from servicing maybe 700-800 people when I first got there to servicing about 3,000, 3,500, upwards to close to 5,000 people on some months.
Yeah, for those of you listening, Mark has put together the most amazing operation that feeds so many people who need it. You're a caretaker. And I am compelled to call you to task on something here.
Go.
Because you said, like, hey, the connections are a part of us, right? And it's the fabric of us somehow. I don't think that's true of all of us. I think a lot of us move through life and we make these momentary connections and we dismiss them as unimportant or something like that. You, man, there's something about you that is present in a moment. I admire it. I admire it, like, right now. You are present in this moment with me, you know? And I feel like, you know, the most important guy in the world because I'm sitting with Mark talking to him.
To me right now, you are. Why would you not be? Why would you not be at this moment the most important person that I'm focusing on? We're having a real conversation. You're asking me about me. People right. love to be asked about them. A lot of people guffaw and go, oh, no, no, no. But I believe one of our favorite topics to talk about is ourselves.
Definitely. But you talk, I've seen this over and over and over again. You talk to other people about themselves.
Yeah, because I find other people fascinating. I figure I know me. I know what I came from. And that's why people can't change what I feel and know about my mother, because I know what I came from. I know the people that have influenced me most in this life, and it's a short list.
Yeah.
But inside of me, I honor them, and I honor that piece of them that I carry around. I think that's, you may be hitting at the root of a problem with a lot of people.
Go ahead.
We, in general, and I always get in trouble from certain people when they go, oh, that's a big blanket, we, but I use it. We, in general, try to, I don't know if the perfect word is escape or deny, but we try to divorce ourselves away from the people and events that make us what we are right now, instead of realizing that is why I'm here right now. Those people, good or bad, are why I'm sitting at this point talking with my buddy John right now. I think so many people try to get away from that. I think a lot of kids do that. They try to get away from their parents. I am not like my mom. I am not like my dad. I am not like you. You don't understand me. You got to respect me for me. That right? coming from a 14, 15, 16-year-old person, it doesn't baffle me. I understand you're trying to become yourself.
Right, right. That's individuation, right? Yes. I'm different than you. Go ahead.
And you still are. But see, and that's the thing that I think people miss. Through my experiences, and you weren't there for all of them.
Right.
And my kids weren't there, and my other friends weren't there. You can't be more individual than that. I am so individual. Now, I can share my stories, but nobody can live those stories. John Duffy has stories, things that he has lived through that are so individual. I mean, even though you were shoulder to shoulder with your brother.
Right.
Or any of your other friends.
Sure.
They didn't live that.
No, we all live that. Everything's unique, right? Everything, every yes. everybody's story is unique, and everybody's experience is unique. If they're living above you in the bunk above, right above you, right? It's yes. it's a different world that you're growing up in, a different culture somehow. We all are our own culture in a way.
Exactly, and we need to, as human beings, accept number one, and then figure out how to embrace that.
Okay, so human beings. So you described your mother as a human being. It sounds like you aspire to be a human being, and that means something more than a person existing on Earth. What does that mean? Well, you know, what did you get from her that makes you a human being like she was a human being?
That I am responsible for everybody. Everybody. I'm responsible for myself, and I'm responsible for a kid playing on a corner with cars zooming by. I'm responsible for somebody who might be hungry when I'm eating a sandwich. I am responsible for somebody that might be just dirty broke like we were when I have more than a few dollars in my pocket. Hmm. That, to me, that is human, realizing that you're responsible, and the word is connected, mm-hmm. realizing that there is that connection, and you can affect that other person. You can affect people in a negative way.
Right. Or people do it all the time.
People do it all the time.
Right.
Turn on the TV. You watch the news. You're hearing nothing but people affecting people in negative ways.
Yeah.
It's not sexy to listen to people who are doing things in a positive way until it's at the end of the newscast and they go, and now on another note, since we've depressed the hell out of you, let's lighten it up a little bit and talk about a little girl who collected presents for some troops, you
right,
know?
Right. Let's give 30 seconds of human interest that yes. actually is real and right. connected and human.
And human.
Yeah.
Being human is not destroying other people. But we see it all the time. Being human is forging that connection. Realize the connection's there. We just have to realize that connection.
When you said, first of all, that's brilliant. And when you said, I'm responsible for everybody, my hair trigger reaction was going to be, oh no, you can't do that, man. That's overwhelming. You got to just responsible for yourself and your family. And you're shaking your head. No, tell me why I'm wrong. Because I know you fervently mean what you say.
Oh, it's my number one mantra in this life. Everybody belongs to me. Again, I'm not around a million people a day.
Right.
But that one person that I'm around, if they need me or need a word from me or need that look from me or that smile from me, then that's all it takes. It's not difficult. It's not a huge.
It's not difficult. It doesn't feel overwhelming.
No.
How does it feel?
It feels like it's the right thing to do. I wish I could, because I know there are people who go, no, it's a big responsibility. Yeah. Well, as soon as you decide it's a big responsibility, you think that you have to take care of a million people and you can't do it. Nobody asks you to take care of the million.
Right.
You take care of that one. Like, and I always use this one with the kids. It's one of the best things that any traveler has ever heard in their life. When the oxygen mask drops from the ceiling, you put yours on and you help those around you. That is the best way to live in life. You put your oxygen mask on and not period. And later on, we'll say the other thing. No, it's two things. You help yourself and then you help everybody else. I think maybe some people get stuck in that, I need to help myself.
Right.
I need to make sure I've got all the oxygen. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure I have, you know, I am living and breathing every molecule of oxygen, or I need to make sure I have every dollar in my pocket.
Right,
I need to make sure I have all the food. And then I can help other people. No. It's almost simultaneous. It goes together. If you take care of yourself, then you can take care of other people. It's not, you might be later. You can.
And I think I hear you saying it's not a suggestion, it's a mandate. Yes?
That's to me, that's the number one rule of being human.
Yeah. Yeah.
Human being.
So is that what mom taught us? Is that what you get from your mom? Like, hey, man, somebody needs help. You bring them in. Somebody needs food and you have it. You give it to them.
Yes. She didn't. And I guarantee you, she didn't try to teach that. My mom is a human being.
Right. So it was organic.
And it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. So some people will come to me and say, I want my kids to have character. So I'm going to send them to a camp, or I'm going to send them to, you know, the YMCA character counts, you know, program or something like that. I think you're saying, I don't think you have to be so intentional about it, because if you're just a human being and you lead a good life, your kids are going to see that. You're modeling for them all the time. They're going to see the good that you do, and they will do good.
Well, that's where it starts. Now, the camps and other things after that are great to broaden your horizons, get you in touch with other people, give you more engrams.
Right, right, right.
You know, you brought up camp. That's always fun to me, because I went to my first camp after not thinking I'd ever be able to go to camp. I was one of those kids that didn't think I'd ever be able to do a lot of things.
Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which sounds like, you know, totally opposite of the way I talk.
Not what I would expect, right.
But, and I don't know how much of this you really want to hear.
Go, man.
I don't want to depress people. I'll do it a nice way. When I was in third grade, I got tested for something. Didn't even know what it was.
Like learning issues or something?
No, went to the university, you know, Bradley University, got tested. And the next year, I was pulled out and taken to a different school across town. None of my neighborhood friends were there, you know, and plunked into this school.
Wow.
And I didn't know why. I didn't overly question it at the time, but it just was. And again, my mom said that was going to happen, and
that's what happened. Okay.
One of the best and worst things that ever happened to me in my life.
Why? Why on both counts?
I'll go worst first, because, you know, let's act like it's a news. I'll give you the bad news first.
Right.
The worst was, again, it took me away from my neighborhood. It took me away from my hours of the day at school with my brothers.
Brothers and friends, right? Yeah.
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 So I would go to the school up the hill and come back down the hill. And as time went on, I didn't have that connection with these guys. I mean, I did have a connection. And then, you know, in the summer I'd see some of them, but my brothers then had that all year connection with their friends. So.
Yeah, it seems kind of brutal.
Again, not brutal. It is. It was. Lovely, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
It was.
Even at the time, you felt accepting of it.
Yes. Like,
this is what's happening.
Because what came from that is I became an avid reader. And I tried to read every book that I possibly could in our public library and in our library at school. I tried to read everything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would get in trouble because I always had as my folks said, you got your nose in a book again.
Really?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like if a kid now, you've got your iPhone in your hand or your iPad or you're on the computer.
Right.
Well, it was books for me.
People were annoyed with you for having your nose in the books.
Yeah. This dovetails into the good thing.
Yeah, talk to me about the good thing.
The good thing was I became an avid reader. I remember my older brothers who didn't live with us. They lived with my dad and my stepmom, and boy, that's a tale for another time. A very interesting story. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep.
But I would go visit them, and my brother would take me around to his friends and go, hey, spell this, spell that, or define this word, or define that word. And his friends would go, oh, damn, he knows how to spell that?
Suddenly you were the very smart kid, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
Which that's one of those things that I remember about my oldest brother that just makes, I was so proud to be his little brother.
How cool.
So cool. And then, you know, I'd stay to spend time with them. They'd make me feel special. And then, you know, I'd go back to my mom on the other side of town.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, I wasn't so special because I was the older brother.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. Right.
Yeah. And I wasn't so special at the new school because there's a lot of white kids, mostly white kids. There were two black kids in the whole school.
Is that right?
Class. Yeah.
Okay.
Which was fraught with its problems. It's interesting, John. I think when we're kids, we are blessed with naivete. We don't know.
What don't we know?
We don't know how odd man out we are sometimes. And we shouldn't.
So, right. And we shouldn't be odd man out, but you weren't even aware? Were you not even thinking, like, I'm one of two black kids in an all-white school here?
Aware, but I was made to be aware. As I got older, you start going, hey. I mean, I didn't think about, oh my God, I got pulled out of my universe and taken to this other school in a new universe up the hill where people's parents were doctors and and professionals, you know, all these white professionals, doctors, and the other kids would have parties that I wasn't invited to.
Right.
And by omission or by, again, their naivete, it doesn't make any difference. But there's a lot of things. I was between worlds. It was like, there's that world up the hill with all my friends there and people who didn't have to fight to pay for the field trip.
Right.
Or fight to pay for the lunch or any of that. But as I got older, I start realizing, wait a minute. Oh my God, I'm on free and reduced lunch.
Yeah. Oh, what a contrast.
God. We're going to on a field trip, and I know my mom doesn't have this job right now. Where am I going to get that money from?
Wow.
You know, and...
Yeah. A little fish out of water? Did you feel a little like, ooh? Did you feel like you didn't belong there?
That's a good question. Because I think all of us... And mind you, I'm still connected with these people today. Most of those people that I only went to grade school with.
That's amazing.
4 through 8, I'm still connected with them.
You get that says something special about you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, good.
And about us as a group.
Absolutely.
My group people, because I swear I always joke with them and say, we were experimented on, and we were. I know I was.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, everybody thinks, you know, diabolical. We're in a laboratory and we're going to take this kid. No.
We're putting electrodes on his head. Yeah. We're switching brains.
Exactly.
Right.
But it was a social experiment.
Got it.
And it's one that, like I said, it was a double-edged, but I am so glad I got cut by it because it changed my life. And I realized I went through a period of, boy, that sucked. Look what they did to me. There were things that happened in that school. If somebody was missing a purse or something, they would look at me.
Wow. Really?
Or the other black. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Wow.
I was taken to the office a couple of times over the years as, you know, hey, did you know what happened to this person's thing or that thing? And again, at the time, that naivete went, oh, no, I don't know. Don't know what you're talking about. Okay, I'm going to go about my business. But
you weren't aware. Right, you don't forget it, and you weren't aware or wholly aware at the time, like, oh, they have me in here, not because they think I did it or I was connected, but because I'm the black kid.
because I'm the black kid.
Yeah.
You know, you know, newsflash, everybody, it exists.
All right, so before we finish up here, and I'm going to insist that you come back and we talk again.
Because I was everywhere.
but take me a generation forward. So you have a son and a daughter, two of my favorite people on earth, right? And how has all of that wealth of experience that you had as a kid, but for better or worse, right? And that learning to be a human being and learning to navigate a little bit of hardship, to navigate... Maybe not abject racism, but certainly race difference of some kind, right? That you were aware of. How did that inform, and how does that continue to inform how you parent these people?
My number one thing, and I've told my wife, I've told other people, I want to bring on this earth and raise human beings that will not destroy your world. John, this is your world.
Yeah, man.
We're sitting here, we're talking in your world. You know, I'm visiting your world. You think you're visiting me. No, I'm visiting you. This is your world. My kids should impact you in all the positive ways they can. They should impact other people in all the positive ways they can. By default, we damage people.
Right.
We injure other people. We hurt other people's feelings. Whether sometimes... by just happenstance or sometimes
inadvertently.
Sometimes by design.
Yep. Absolutely.
We do that, but in the overall picture, I wanted to raise good human beings.
And can you think of, well, first of all, we couldn't argue that you haven't, right? You've got two young adults, and they're different from each other in so many discernible ways, yet both remarkable human beings.
Well, you'll have to tell me that.
I am telling you that.
Because, for sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can be hyperbolic at times, but there's no hyperbole there. These are two of the finest human beings I've ever known.
They should both say thank you to you.
Well,
because
it's not really, it's in a way, it's not a compliment. It's just a fact.
And that should be the fact.
Right.
That's why I can't say, hey, thanks, John. I really appreciate it. But what was I supposed to do?
Right. But okay. But let me ask you this as kind of a final salvo here.
Okay.
What is the one thing you have done as their father that has fostered that in them, fostered that human beingness in them?
Hands down. Tell them over the years in my way, all of the mistakes I've made and all of the bad things that have happened to me, and cover that ugly cake.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful
yeah.
story for ugly children, as I say. Cover that cake with, but everything is wonderful. Look where I am now. Look where we are now. Nothing killed me, John. Nothing has killed me.
Right. Quite the contrary, right?
Right. Yeah. I am living. Yeah. I am thriving.
Yes.
And I always say, look, I tell people when they're down and they're complaining about something, well, get up and do something about it. Don't just die. Make them kill you.
Right.
Die.
Yeah.
If you're going to be dead, then make somebody kill you.
and part of your message there is, you know, I work with a lot of parents who are like, don't share your stories. Don't tell your kids what you've been through.
You just hit me.
I think that's enough said.
Because that's the worst thing you can do. You can't start telling your kids that you're human when they're 15.
I think you're so right about that. I think I love your message, Mark, top to bottom. And I think you share your experience, and you know, instead of a lecture, it's life. Right? You share your life with your kids, and then they know, then they get it. Then they can really understand. It gives them something to really grab onto, and they can see, okay, Dad's been through some stuff, and here he is, you know, and he's the guy we want to be, you know, like we're working towards that. Or he's the type of guy we want to be.
I hope that's what they got.
Yeah.
We can't discern the things that we're closest to, you know, our vision isn't good. So we more often than not depend on other people to tell us, hey, how am I doing?
Right. Well, let me tell you, man, you're doing amazing. And you're one of my favorite people on earth. And I'm grateful to talk to you. And I love you like a brother, man.
Oh, and you know I love me some John Duffy. One of the few people I seriously call my brother. And we've been through things.
We've been through things, and I think we can accurately, fairly call each other that. Maybe even more so than our brothers. another talk for another time, Mark. Thank you, and you and I. I'm not even going to ask. You and I will be back in the space. Look to hear from Mark again. Thanks again. You can find this podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, on WGN Plus. If you have any thoughts, comments, questions, or ideas for this podcast, follow me on Facebook, Dr. John Duffy. There is a free parenting program on my website, drjohnduffy.com. I encourage you to check it out. All you have to do is watch videos, no big deal. And once again, I so appreciate your time here. Thanks so much.